This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Monday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
Oh, and the weather outside is frightful again. I mean, another atmospheric river, more windstorms, flooding. No, I can't stand it. Make it stop.
Yeah, looking at the weather report this week, it's supposed to just be wet day after wet day after wet day. It's kind of like, well, we're going to get a little break overnight here. It's like, yeah, that doesn't do us any good.
I feel poor Washington State is just, I mean, I think they've declared flood emergencies everywhere. In Idaho, Shoshone County has declared it. So the whole inland and Pacific Northwest is really just getting hammered. There's high wind warnings, which is freaking me out because we live in a bunch of trees and it's like,
Oh yeah, we've got the trees out behind. Like, yeah, I'm fairly confident we have some big trees out behind us, but they survived the storm of 2020, and I'm kind of going, I think they'll be okay at this point. Yeah. Especially because they're leafless at this point, so there's not as much to catch the wind.
There you go. It'll just whistle right past him. We need to, of course, mention out this week, Bi-Mart's got their Christmas savings book out there, so lots of good deals in that. We'll probably talk more about that tomorrow because it's Lucky Number Tuesday tomorrow.
Well, yeah, and I think part of Lucky Number Tuesday this week is like $100 gift cards are being given away, $250 gift cards.
What?
For a few grand prize selections. I'm sitting there going, yeah, I'm going to make sure I'm in there and ready to check my lucky numbers.
Yeah, as you buy some ammo. All right. Well, today, of course, today is Bill of Rights Day, so I celebrate that. So happy Bill of Rights Day to you today. And I really need this, frankly. It's National Cupcake Day. Mm-hmm. I need a cupcake. The news over the weekend absolutely stressed me out. I've got agita 6 ways to Sunday. I think a cupcake would be really nice.
Yeah, it is a good day for a cupcake. And in this last, of course, I'm sitting there going, this makes me think that even the extreme offals deserve their day in the sun. So today is National Cat Herders Day.
How many times does it feel like we are herding cats, especially in the news cycle? It's like, okay, come on, everybody, and off they go, and there's nothing you can do. So, yeah, it's crazy. And the news cycle, I know everybody's been talking about it. Don't know, Hunter. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, and of course, today is National Bill of Rights Day because in 1791, the Bill of Rights was ratified. So,
yes.
So we'll kick off our today in history with that.
Absolutely. We absolutely will. 1925, Madison Square Garden opened with an NHL game. Obviously, that is hockey. New Hampshire or New York lost to the Canadiens. Bummer, man.
Yeah. And then 1938, the United States sends a fourth note to Germany demanding amnesty for the Jews.
Mm, yeah. Okay. This one's interesting, and I didn't know it was in 73. American Psychiatric Association removes homosexuality from its list of psychiatric disorders. So that was all the way back in 73. Yeah. Wow.
And 1978, President Carter dumps Taiwan for China.
He's just not that into you, Taiwan. 1993, Schindler's List open. This is the film that would win Spielberg his first Oscar. This is on my list of films I can only watch once. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely a devastating film. Sophie's Choice is another one. There's a few of them. AI, Glory. I have a couple that I'm like, I'm only watching them once. They just emotionally are devastating.
Yes. And then 2001, after 11 years of repairs, the Leaning Tower of Pisa reopens.
Wait, isn't it still leaning, though? I wonder, what did they do?
You can't straighten it up at this point. I know. Because, you know, now it's not historic. You always see that in like cartoons and things like that where, you know, they're having their cartoon battle in the Leaning Tower of Pisa is leaning and they, you know, to fix the battle, they straighten it up right.
Let's see. Also on this day in 2005, the F-22 Stealth Raptor stealth fighter goes into service. Wow. Wow. Happy 20th anniversary. That is cool.
And of course, in 2001, also at the same time they reopened the Leaning Tower Pizza, the U.S. declared an end to the war in Iraq.
Did you say pizza?
Pizza? No, I said pizza. Come on. You're just hearing things because it's lunchtime at this point.
I haven't had lunch.
You need that cupcake.
I know. I need that cupcake. Pizza sounds good, though. This is interesting. And I did not... Merriam-Webster's, they always do their word of the year. Mm-hmm. And Time Magazine... I'm sorry, a little side tangent here. The Time Magazine person of the year should be Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's people behind AI... Time Magazine. Again, who reads it? Nobody. It's
and that's the thing. Time Magazine, they've shown in recent years that they really have no clue about reality. They're living with an agenda. So, the AI agenda, we've all seen Terminator 2. That might be a movie down the road where you can only watch it once because it's so real. But
yeah, Skynet. Well, their word of the year for 2005 is slop. Kind of agree with this. What does it say? Creepy, zany, and demonstrably fake content is often called slop. The word's proliferation online, in part thanks to the widespread availability of generative artificial intelligence, has landed it on the top of the word. Slop was first used in the 1700s to mean soft mud. I mean, I always thought it was like pig food. Mm-hmm. Slop the pigs, slop the hogs. But it evolved more generally to mean something of little value. I think that's fine. I would say, okay, that's a good word of the year.
I think it
fits on many levels.
I think it fully fits and it works. But the irony is, I don't really see people referring to things like that as slop. I mean, I it's not a word I'm hearing often, but yet it perfectly describes what's going on. Maybe I'm just not hip and cool enough anymore.
Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe we both aren't.
I'm on the downhill slope. Is that what you're trying to say?
You are. You're over 40, Hunter. Sorry.
If I step on the slop, I'm going down even faster.
Anyway, like we said, it's been a horrific news weekend from what happened in Australia and at Brown University. Obviously horrifying. I was watching all of that last night. I'm watching a movie and I check my phone, which I really need to stop doing. Mm-hmm. I need to stop doing that. Charlie Kirk has got a new book about really the Sabbath and taking time off. I need to just do that. It's so hard, though. But I saw the horrible news about what happened to Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle. Mm-hmm. And that absolutely horrific. And I obviously, allegedly, if you've not heard, their son, Nick, has been arrested, 32-year-old son, who obviously has had some severe mental issues, drug addiction issues. They were heard at a Christmas party, arguing very loudly. Bottom line is, it was a death by stabbing. It's absolutely horrific. Lots of people commenting on it and things like that. I don't even want to preface it with the whole political side of things. This is just awful. Every way you look at it is awful. So I'm gonna take it over here because he was a very gifted artist, mm-hmm. and director and actor. I grew up watching him as Meathead, Mike Stivic on Archie Bunker, the All in the Family. Never agreed with his character at all. Movies include This Is Spinal Tap, one of the best mockumentaries, the first mockumentary ever. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. It Goes to 11. That comes from that. Nigel, I think, is the one who made that comment on his amplifier. Stand By Me, of course, coming of age story, great story. The Princess Bride, and one of my all-time favorites, When Harry Met Sally, and then, of course, Misery and A Few Good Men, to name a few. Again, a very brilliant artist. Lots of people coming out and sharing kind words, thoughtful words, and a lot of people are not. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been very frustrated by a lot of this because I'm coming down on the side of I don't celebrate anybody's death. I just don't. Regardless of whether they're politically on my side or not, I don't celebrate that. This is horrific what has happened here.
Well, that's what's so frustrating about seeing what's going on in the world of social media. Like we always say, social media is not real life. It is people behind a keyboard being tough and trying to come up with the one-liner that will make them go viral and yada, yada. And I sit here and said, and that's part of the big issue is so much of society today is losing our humanity.
Yeah.
And this just is like, it's a cherry on the top. You know, we talked about the responses to Charlie Kirk's assassination and how mm-hmm. vile and disgusting they were. And here's Rob Reiner, fully polar opposite. He had plenty to say when Charlie Kirk and Rush Limbaugh himself passed away. And you sit here and go, but yet that's what separates us from the violence and what's going on in the streets, is being able to say we're all human beings and we should, you know, mourn the loss of anyone, whether we agree or whether we disagree. And it's sad and frustrating to see responses that are, you know, pointing out, well, he said it about other people, so we get to say it about him. No, that's not how life works.
No, it isn't. And I, you know, a lot of the vile stuff that was said, I posted an article on my personal page, When Death Becomes a Punchline, What We Lose When We Celebrate Our Enemy's End. And there's some interesting comments on it. And friends of mine are saying, I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing that. And I'm like, I'm not seeing it among my friends, and I'm not seeing it among most of the right, you know, Twitterati, the pundits and the talking heads out on X. I'm not seeing much of it on Facebook. And on the other side, when Charlie Kirk passed away, most the people that are in my personal sphere were very upset. They did not agree with him politically, but they were very upset by what happened. And I have to say, even Rob Reiner was on Piers Morgan and came down on the side of humanity. What I don't like is this sort of whataboutism. It's like, well, he said this when this person died and that person. Okay, that was crappy. Do we have to do this because they did it? We have to do it too? Is there at some point where you really want to rise above? And I have to say, in all honesty, I was very frustrated to see the president's truth about this. It really would have been a time to say, you know, a very sad thing happened last night in Hollywood. Leave that sentence at that. May they rest in peace. Leave the rest of it out of it. I know that there's a lot of stuff and garbage and bad things said. I think was a missed opportunity, and I was disappointed in it.
Well, and that's, you know, I sit here and I go, so much of what Rob Reiner would say and people in that thing are along the lines of, you know, Trump and MAGA are just self-centered and they don't care about other people and they don't have the humanity. And I'm sitting here going, and here's the opportunity to just sit there and say, not make it about Trump and Rob Reiner not liking him. Just say, sad day, our condolences. You know, because now by the tweet, and he's not celebrating the death, obviously.
No, he's not celebrating.
He's putting the camera back on him, unfortunately.
I know.
And I sit here and say, you are giving the people that don't like you more fuel to not like you.
And that's the thing. And I have many people that are in my personal sphere whose patience is a little bit running thin, or based on what's happening with immigration and things like that, they've got differences with that. And now this puts us in a position of, first of all, I'm not going to defend this.
No.
I think it was a missed opportunity. I don't think it was the right take on it. I think it could have been the first sentence and the last sentence, and all the stuff in between should have been deleted. Maybe sleep on it. But that's just me. But it makes it harder now because there is a backlash, and it was unnecessary, and it's really it's unfortunate. And this literally comes down to, if you don't have anything nice to say, just don't say anything at all.
Well, what's the big talking point right now? Is Trump and his administration and MAGA people, they just don't care about other people that aren't just like them.
Right.
And unfortunately, now with this kind of a statement, you can't sit here and say, no, they care about all people, you know?
I know.
It's
exhausting. I want to come back. I follow someone who I have a lot of respect for. His name is Gad Saad. And he made a comment, some comments about empathy. And I just want to expand on that a little bit, but we're running a little bit long here. So let's come back and talk about empathy. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Okay, empathy. I talk about one of my favorite recent books by Ali Beth Stuckey, Toxic Empathy, and empathy comes up all the time. I mean, if you disagree with sort of the left's narrative on anything, you're accused of not caring, hating, being afraid, you know, all the things that are thrown at you. Empathy is a wonderful thing. There's a sweet spot. Mm-hmm. And I follow this a writer, Gad Saad. Let me just read. I really like Gad. He's a professor, evolutionary behavioral scientist, author. He's a great account. And so he posted President Trump's, I think it's a truth social. It's got a pink thing on it. It's not a tweet. He says, quote, "I fully understand that Mr. Reiner was unhinged in his delusional hatred of POTUS, but I think that it might have been best to simply say rest in peace or nothing at all. And believe me, I'm all for the honey badger mindset." So he went on and he further released a video. And I really come down on this because empathy comes up when we're talking about immigration, when we're talking about illegal immigration, when we're talking about refugees, empathy comes up all the time. And there is a point when too much empathy becomes, frankly, suicidal for a country. But not enough empathy is the other side of it, where you're kind of, what, the right? Conservatives are accused a lot of times of being uncaring, not sympathetic, because we have different views on this. And basically saying that there is a sweet spot, and it was really unfortunate, and I tend to agree with this, that the president missed the sweet spot. What do you think about that?
No, and that's my thing. I'm sitting there going, with everything going on in the world today, and the way the media covers news in left and right, whether it's at the local level with, you know, the accusations being thrown at Republicans here in Oregon, or whether it's at the national level with Trump and his presidency, there's plenty of places to push back and take the jabs and defend. But when it comes to the death of someone by whether it's natural causes, by assassination, by murder, whatever the scenario is, death is not the place to sling that last arrow into the grave. It's not worth it. It doesn't, it makes the person slinging the arrow look bad compared to the person that maybe deserved it, but guess what? They're no longer with us and they can't defend themselves at that point.
Exactly. Death is, that's the one permanent. And again, if you're interested in that article, I thought it was a really good article and it sparked some conversation. Somebody was on here agreed it would have infuriated his haters more if he took the high road. Bottom line with the president, for a certain number of people, he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. And I get that. And I get that he has every right to be really kind of pissed off about all of this. Just this was tone deaf. This was not appropriate. Again, I agree that there's that sweet spot in empathy, too little or too much. And then again, the larger conversation with empathy and compassion, we hear those words thrown around a lot, kind of flung at that those of us on the right, that we don't clearly have enough of it if we don't agree with certain things. And all of it is just, it's really getting exhausting. But again, that's it. And again, the whataboutism really is starting to really annoy me.
Yeah. Well,
so this guy was a jerk, so I got to be a jerk in response?
Well, I don't think so. You know, if you break society into really about five different groups of 20%, you have the 20% that no matter what Trump does, it is wrong. Whether he had taken the high road, the low road, whatever.
Absolutely.
That they're not going to like him. And he'd just ignore those people because they're online and they're going to kick and scream and throw hissy fits. Then there's the 20% on the far extreme, which are the ones out here defending Donald Trump's mentality of, you know, well, Rob Reiner deserved it.
I don't think he's saying that.
No, I'm not saying that. But that's what the 20% extremist mentality is.
Right-hand, yes.
It's that 60% in the middle where you can have the influence, and it's you know, by doing something like this, you're kind of frustrating, you know, the 20% that didn't vote for Trump and the 20% that are undecided and sitting there saying, we don't like this response. You're giving them a negative taste. Where if he had just come out and said, you know, Rob Reiner lost his life, rest in peace, you know, then that 60% in the middle is going to sit there and go, okay, I can live with that sentiment.
Yeah. Well, again, if you don't follow Gad out on X, I certainly would. And I spelled his name. It's G-A-D-S-A-A-D. And I thought that was a good take. And so, you know, the empathy. And again, it's part of a broader conversation. But I'm also talking about what happened in Australia was absolutely horrific. And we'll cover that a little more. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. But a lot of this really just goes to show, because Australia disarmed its citizens in what, 96, 97? Mm-hmm. Remember the big gun buyback? And now you've got people that are essentially helpless, and you had a father and son mowing down people with bolt action rifles and the police hiding behind cars.
I sit here and go, it is such a prime example of the gun control that is trying to be pressed on us here.
Yep.
Australia is an island. There is no land where people could literally cross over a border on foot with a bag of guns. But yet this father and son managed to get their hands on a gun, two guns, and yet there is no one that can stop them because everyone else is following the law and disarmed. And it is such a great example of their mentality of, you know, law-abiding citizens, return your guns. Don't worry, because the bad guys are just going to do the same thing too.
Right. And the police are there to protect you? Clearly not. There is one, a gentleman who's coming up. I think his name is Ahmed Al-Ahmed, who tackled one of them. Mm-hmm. And got the gun away from him. He, a heroic bystander who wrestled the gun from Bondi Beach attacker, is son of refugees and the father of two. And so Mr. Ahmed, he got that gun away from him. And he didn't take him down, though. The guy ran away and got another one. There's a horrific story about a 10-year-old girl who was murdered. And watching the, and again, this is video I wish I hadn't seen. They're on a bridge kind of shooting down. And you're not talking, this is not an automatic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bolt action, and it's methodical and deliberate and precise targeting. And one of them was a 12-year-old girl who was murdered simply because she's Jewish. This was a Hanukkah festival, a Hanukkah celebration on Bondi Beach. And this stuff has just got to stop, and we have to be able to talk about who's behind all of this.
Yeah, because, yeah, the message they want to sit there is say the gunners out there shooting people and, you know, these automatic weapons, and they're all scary, they look scary. And yet here we see yet another example of, yeah, like bolt action rifles in the hands of somebody that wants to cause damage is going to cause massive damage if there's not someone there that's capable of stopping it.
And there's a ideology behind this, and this is absolutely vicious and horrible, and we're seeing more and more of this. There was also an attack at Brown all coming up, and I'm not sure, I haven't been following that. There's just been so much news. It's just hard to keep up with it, and the carnage and the horridness. It's just it's exhausting, it's soul crushing, much of it. It really is just I need a cupcake.
We need to have weekends for disconnecting and being able to relax and enjoy this time of the year because Christmas absolutely. Is coming up.
I know, absolutely. Okay, on that note, everybody, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Home Comfort and the Perlin Mill.
Okay, I took a nice, good cleansing breath during the break. Serenity now, serenity now.
Well, the easiest way, and it's the hardest thing to do in today's society, is just get disconnected for a period of time.
It really is. In fact, I'm going to be buying Charlie's book. I forget, it's Make Room for the Sabbath, something like that, which I think, I know my son has talked about this as well, where you just take a day, Sunday mainly, you know, most people, that's the Sabbath, or for, you know, Friday nights, Fridays where you don't do anything, Shabbat Shalom, but just to take a day. And disconnect. It is so hard to do, and it takes discipline. And frankly, apparently I'm not disciplined enough right now, so I need to work on that, because I tend to just go like the first thing in the morning because my alarm is on my phone, and then I'll look at it and see notifications. And so the little screen starts the day, I move to the bigger screen, and it's like by the end of the day, I've been on screens all day long.
Yeah, well, in the way the world works right now, it used to be there were places where you could go where there was no internet connection and you know, and you could barely get a phone signal. So you could, you know, you'd actually find a place physically to go where you can disconnect. You don't get that anymore. There's very few places out there that have absolutely zero access to the digital world any longer.
That's true, because even if you're sort of not with Wi-Fi or anything, there's probably 5G around you. It might be a tower disguised as a pine tree. It's not working, though. I always recognize them. I can tell they're not real.
You notice anyway, when they...
I see you. I see you, cell tower, with little branches all over it. You're not fooling me. I know what you are. All right. Switching gears a little bit. I saw this, this op-ed, and I don't know who this individual is. It's written by a gentleman named Matthew Piatt. Apparently he's running for governor. I was not aware of that, but he has an interesting take on this. The headline is "Front Runners in Race for Oregon Governor Built Their Careers in Government. It's Time for a Change." I can't say that I disagree with that headline.
No. And I think then that's the thing is, we are, you know, we have grown conditioned to believe that someone who's spent 40 years in politics has a better understanding of what the average American goes through than someone who's actually made a career, a successful career, made a lot of money. And I'm sitting there going, but yet that's not the way it used to be. in the founding days of this nation, we didn't have career politicians. These were average people that, you know, owned farmland and that were the politicians of the day. And I'm kind of going, so society as a whole is kind of flipped on its head, where now you can make a career out of being a politician, which we're seeing everywhere right now.
Compared to
working through the public, you know, the private industry and becoming successful on your own and then running to make the difference so the next generation can be successful the way you were. And I get so frustrated with this mentality of we've achieved it. So now we need to elect these lifelong politicians who allowed us to achieve it, because guess what? No matter how many taxes and fees and, you know, punishments you get for earning a dollar privately, you know, they're going to make sure you might be successful someday.
Yeah. And I like Ronald Reagan government is the problem. It's not the answer. And I don't like when the knee jerk for a lot of people running for office, and many of the individuals that are running will say, well, there's a government program for that, or I'm going to look to the government to do that. He's specifically talking about Governor Tina Kotek and Christine Drazen, who are running for obviously their party's nomination, Democrat and Republican. He posits that neither of them have built a career outside of the public sector. Instead, their careers have largely centered on political work and public sector paychecks. Mm-hmm. Kotek has been embedded in government and public service roles and has a professional history deep in policymaking, administration, and legislative leadership. Drazen also has a resume built entirely around government and politics roles that are funded by the taxpayer and not by private investment. So this guy, again, his name is Matthew Piot. He says he has a business career spanning 40 years. He was a landman. We're going to talk about landman, one of my favorite TV shows right now, but not right now. As a petroleum landman negotiating oil and gas leases on the property of the company he wanted to drill on. He goes through, I'm not going to go through his whole resume, but he has more than 30 years of private sector experience in high technology. The downside of this is I do not know who this man is. I've never heard of him. Mm-hmm. Politics is about name recognition. So while I like the message and I agree with what he's saying in here, you got to get your name out there. And I was surprised. This is from the 13th, December 13th. So I agree with him, but I don't know who he is. And so if I don't, probably a lot of other people don't.
Well, and that's the other challenging thing. And I think the frustrating thing in my lifetime, watching politics become a popularity contest. I mean, it is, and that's the way it really is now. It's no longer about whose policies can best, make America better. It's now become who puts out the best face forward, who can do the TV interviews and show up on MTV and yada yada, whatever it is, play the saxophone and, you know, be well spoken.
Boxers or briefs.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going. That's the big change I've seen in my lifetime is politics has now become a popularity contest.
I agree. And people that are, you know, hey, whoever promises the most free stuff. Mm-hmm. And to me, government programs are never the answer to this. Here's a comment in here, which in sums it up. There are more government insiders than economic. They are more government insiders than economic builders. This is not a small detail, but something that goes to the heart of what type of leadership they offer. If Oregon is stuck choosing between Kotek and Drazen, what's really at stake is not just a political party, but a recurring model of governments with a government-first mentality. Limited economic innovation and a type of politics that maintains the status quo. I don't know anybody. This is the first time I've seen this. I mean, it's been articulated sort of in private conversations, but he's right. And pretty much I've had conversations with family members in other states who there was an outsider who had a lot of private sector experience, but this individual didn't want to vote for this person because he didn't have any government experience. And so it's like, so there's this thing that you've got to have the government experience to get the top job. I think we need to break that narrative.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I sit here and go, you know, I mean, unfortunately, what we see more often than not with the outsiders coming in is they end up playing that third party spoiler.
Right.
You know, the Ross Perot's of the world. And I just sit here and go, we need to convalesce. Of course, I think our number one priority here in Oregon is definitely finding a Republican, whether it's Christine Drazen or Daniel Bethel or this gentleman here, to remove, you know, Tina out of the office, because her policies are going to take us farther and farther into the death spiral.
Oh, yeah.
Where at least these established Republicans in politics are going to retain the status quo and possibly bring us out a little bit. You know, I'm not sitting here going with a Democrat controlled, you know, inside the Marble House. Even if we get a Republican governor, I don't know if the changes they can make alone are going to be significant enough to pull us fully out of the death spiral we're currently in.
That's a great point. And also to know this gentleman, Mr. Piatt, I don't know if he's running as a Republican. He doesn't say in here what he is doing. He has lived in the Beaverton area since 1991. He raises some good points that I think ought to spark a broader conversation. And I think that would be great. Again, I don't know if he's running as an independent, then yes, he becomes a third party spoiler. And yes, I'm glad you mentioned Danielle. Danielle has a lot of private sector background. She's also got government background. So I don't know. Maybe she's the sweet spot. Who knows? But
Kochak
has been in there long enough to know.
Of course, we also see the rumors flying around that former Trailblazer Chris Dudley could be running as well, which adds another element to all of that, where, you know, does he have government experience? Well, not a ton.
No.
But he has a lot of name recognition, especially in the sports community in the state of Oregon.
Right. And that goes to the conversation we were having last week, where you've got a lot of people saying, oh, they all should all get into a dark room somewhere. I don't know, light up some cigars and pick one. That's what the primary's for.
Yep.
So if this gentleman is running in the Republican primary, more power to him. That's great. I mean, I love that this is part of the conversation. But once the primary is over and Republicans in Oregon have decided, that's the time. That's not the time to be voting out here in the fringes. We've learned that with Newt Bueller and some other people when we got Kate Brown, because there were purity tests. And I just, those conversations I had back then, too. Well, I don't agree 100%. It's okay. Get him in there. You can work with him. You can move him in other directions, but get him in there, or her. Just get a Republican in there. You don't have to agree with them. 80-20.
But see, that's the problem with the Republican side of the aisle, is they want to agree with a Republican candidate 100%. And it's like, but the Democrats don't agree with the Democrat candidate 100%. They just see the D and they go, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, yeah. So I appreciate Matthew Piatt's perspective on this. This was, where was this? It was at the lookouteugene-springfield.com, a site that I've never heard of, no more every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, he's in the Community Voices, a little bit of an op-ed here. So, Matthew Piatt.
Yeah, we'll see if we hear anything more out of him, if he can kind of grow that name recognition as we move forward and see how things go.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a break, and then I want to shift gears again. We talked about this gentleman and his career was a former landman. There was an interesting episode of Landman bringing up some things, and then an icon of daytime television has passed, and I'm a little sad. So we're going to take a break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
Okay, I love this show. It's one of my new favorite shows. I watch it. Granted, if you've got delicate ears, there's F-bombs galore in it, and there's a lot of language in it. And I don't even know if I can read this quote 100%. I may kind of, but it's Landman, Billy Bob Thornton. He's fantastic in this show. This is a Taylor Sheridan show out of the Taylor Sheridan universe. I mean, I was a fan of 1883, 1923, Yellowstone, except for the ending of that, but I just really am a fan of him. But the Tommy character played by Billy Bob Thornton is just it's a spectacular character. He's so good. And then his father is played by Sam Elliott, who I've always thought was amazing. But in this episode, it takes shots at The View. Hate The View. Way back in the day when it first started, when Barbara Walters was still on it and I was a stay-at-home mom, I would watch The View before it got stupid and all the whole Rosie and the Whoopi and the Joy and the blah.
Well, we'll get into that later, because there is
horrible yapping yentas. But he urges his father to kill time around the house by watching a TV show and suggests The View. When the father admits that he doesn't know what this is, Tommy explains, it's a bunch of pissed off millionaires bishing about how much they hate millionaires and Trump and men and you and me and everybody else they got to be up their butt about. It's pretty funny. That is so true.
Oh, yeah. No, it hits the nail on the head, and I'm sitting there going, a show like this, even in today's Hollywood, is not surprising that they would take a shot, because guess what? That's playing right into their audience. and that's what they need. And I'm kind of going, that is what makes it hysterical, because on normal network TV, you would never see anything like this.
Oh, no, no. And I mean, he's talked about other things. I think there was a scene out there at one of the oil derricks or whatever, talking about how, to this attorney woman, it was in the first season, about how, you know, environmental and all the garbage that comes out from environmentalists. And he really just, you know, brought down a truth bomb on her about petroleum is in everything. And you little idiots from No Oil or Stop Oil would throw soup cans on everything and reporting it about it on their iPads, you know, with their sneakers and their cell phones. Oil is in everything. And it was just a really righteous speech from the first season. I think it's a great show. Yeah. Again, if you're sensitive to a lot of swear words, maybe there's an angel version that bleeps it out, which probably take about half the dialogue.
Yeah, well, and for me, I haven't had a chance to sit down and actually watch it. I plan on it. It's one of the ones that I keep seeing, and I'm like, I need to watch this show. But of course, speaking about you, you know, back in the days when you used to be a stay-at-home mom and watch The View, and then, of course, that led to the stories that you got to enjoy after that some news came out from
those.
This was more,
I was in high school. I believe the whole thing was 1981. And of course, I'm talking about Luke and Laura on General Hospital. In the early 80s, the late 70s and early 80s, sitcoms, soap operas, they changed from being more about the stories. They skewed to a younger demographic. So here, Anthony Geary and Jeannie Francis were Luke and Laura. Luke Spencer, well, he has passed at 78. I didn't know he was 78. It's hard to believe, which means I'm getting older too. But we remember Luke Spencer as being sort of quirky, impulsive. He had that really bad fro, but it was like that hair of his. And honestly, there was the controversy about how they got together, the rape and the disco. Clearly, I watched this show. Okay? but I'm sad to see that he's passed. That was such a cultural phenomenon. It was around the same time as the royal wedding with Lady Di and Prince Charles and all of that. And I remember I was working at the mall in Paramus, New Jersey, and that's all we talked about. And I was working at a card shop, and there was so much merch for General Hospital. It was such a huge thing.
Well, yeah. No, I remember my mom, you know, watching General Hospital when you were young, and my grandmother and everything else. And you know, they just loved those soap operas. And like you said, the evolution of the soap opera where they went, you know, to the point where by the time I was high school age, we had Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place, which are literally like they were teenage, early 20s soap operas. And we're still seeing that today.
We had prime time when I was younger, too. Dallas. Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't remember the whole Who Shot JR? I mean, that was a global phenomenon. I wasn't a super fan. I kind of like Dynasty. I like the shoulder pads. Still want shoulder pads to come back, people.
For me, it was Who
they
Shot.
They make your waist look tiny.
For me, it was Who Shot George Burns. You know, the Simpsons take on it.
Oh, see,
I was a little too young for the you know, the Dynasty stuff, but you know, I had the Simpsons growing up. So,
oh gosh, the Simpsons. Which, well, of course, and then we have South Park. Oh man.
Well, and of course, the soap opera mentality gave way to trash TV, aka reality television, and you know, the train wrecks of Jersey Shore and everything else you could come up with.
You know, it's funny. I spent a lot of time on the Jersey Shore, and a lot of that was, granted, it was like amped up to 11.
So that wasn't reality.
Spinal Tap.
That wasn't reality.
Yes, I knew a lot of people like those. What was her name? Snooki. I knew a couple Snookies, and what was the one guy? What was his name? The Situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a lot of it was about the fake tan. I do the fake tan thing. I get that, and just the sort of that Italian culture. So yeah, was it super exaggerated for television? Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yes. And of course we can go back, and I'll talk about my weekend for a moment here. Since we did talk about being able to disconnect and not pay attention to social media, I wouldn't recommend the way I did it this weekend. My 7-year-old on Friday afternoon fell out of a tree and broke her arm in two places.
Aww.
So I spent the majority of the weekend, one, not sleeping. And of course, two, not paying a lick of attention to my phone because I was tending to a 7-year-old with a broken arm. So
that Mm-hmm. And I love that she was up climbing in a tree. I mean, I was a tree climber. I never fell out. But I remember back in the day when we were kids, that broken bones men were a badge of honor. And you got that cast and you had everybody sign it. And by the time they cut that thing off, it was totally grungy and it was covered in signatures. And it was cool. Breaking your arm sucks.
Yep.
But that was like sort of the social upside of it. It's like, wow, how did you do that?
Yes, we've already had those conversations. Her older sister's like, I remember when I was your age and someone in my class broke their arm. It was the coolest thing and everyone signed it. So, of course, and now it's no longer the white plaster like we all remember.
Right.
Now they wrap it with colors. And so it's pink and purple cast on her arm.
Woo.
So we need to get a silver pen for writing on the purple for when she's able to return to school in a few days. But so, we've had that kind of a weekend, and it throws that monkey wrench in every plan you could possibly come up with. But it did keep me off social media for the weekend.
Yeah, because it was a horrific. You know, now they do 3D printed casts,
mm-hmm.
which are kind of like, I mean, those are cool. So, yeah, I saw that. I saw that your wife had posted that, and it was just like, oh, prayers for the poor girl, because it's traumatic no matter what, and it doesn't feel good. And so, but yeah, having that cast is like, all right, well.
Well,
okay.
And that's the thing to me. I'm sitting here going, it's literally she was doing the same thing she does every day when she gets home.
Yep.
Every day she goes up, she plays around in the front yard for a few minutes, hangs from the limb that she fell from. And today she just dropped from it like she normally would and landed awkwardly on her foot, which then sent her crashing down with all of her weight onto her arm. So, yeah, and of course, at this age, the other part is all the mental challenges that come with it because she's very afraid right now that the wrong motion will re-trigger everything and she'll feel the initial pain once again.
Yeah. Yeah, I never broke any bones as a kid. I broke a bone, I think it was 10 or 15 years ago. I was rollerblading and fell backwards on it and my like a compression fracture in my elbow. Just that little thing hurt like crazy. So I can't even imagine the level of pain she's been having to deal with. It's certainly not easy. But it sounds like you were treated really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital.
Salem Hospital ER was wonderful. They actually got her right in real quick. Of course, being the parents, we're never patient about it. And
of course not. That's your child.
Yeah. And of course, they talked, everything, explained everything as they went through. We did end up having to go up to Dornbecker's for a Saturday morning surgery for pins and setting it and everything else just because of the location of the fracture. They wanted the experts. They were great. We were actually in and out of there. We were done there before noon on Saturday.
Wow.
But yeah, once again, very little sleep and everything's, for what occurred, I think everything is worked as well as it can at this point. Now it's just a matter of getting over the fear of re-injuring herself.
Yeah. And that'll take a couple of days, but no, that's good. And it's good to hear that everything worked out and they got you in so quick and she's now on the mend.
Yep. The only downside now is her little sister is very, very jealous of her need
for
her. Yes, her needing mom and dad and everyone else to help her with routine things. Her little sister is not a fan of that. Gets very vocal and tries to push us away occasionally when we're helping her. So,
but I'm the baby. She's the baby.
Oh yeah, I sit here and go, what's the future going to hold as she grows the family even a little more come next year? So,
I love it. All right. Well, we're glad that your daughter is on the mend. That's it for us, everybody. Stay dry out there. We will see you tomorrow. Enjoy the day.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.